Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty on a Sunday night for your Monday entertainment. Got a fun show planned. We're going to discuss Bellator 266 and UFC Fight Night 192, also known as UFC Vegas 37, also known as UFC on ESPN Plus 50, also known as UFC Fight Night Smith versus Spann. Can you believe it, folks? All that SEO, different people call it different things, but it's the same show, whether it's a hashtag or however it gets filed with the different websites. I just got a kick out of it as I was looking over my notes. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the latest news this week. We also have UFC 265 coming up with two title fights, and one championship has an offering as well. So we'll cover everything coming up, everything that took place, and of course we'll sprinkle in a little bit of the pig skin. Come on, man. It's a big sport. We all love it. We all got a squad, so we got to talk a little bit about it. Maybe it's because my squad's 2-0. That's why I'm so jacked. We'll be right back. MMA Junkie Radio. It's the Monday, September 20th show being delivered early on a Sunday. All right, so goes, I guess, in order. It did go first. UFC Fight Night was kind of like a matinee show. It started at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern with the prelims, and then it moved on to 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and then that was followed by Bellator. So let's go UFC first, and then we'll do that. Starting with the results. Look, Hannah Goldie took care of Emily Whitmire. Gustavo Lopez and Haley Alatang fought to a draw. Carlston Harris and defeated Impa Kasanganai. Aaron Blanchfield defeated Sarah Alpar. Montel Jackson defeated JP Bayes. Zhu Rong defeated Brandon Jenkins. Raquel Pennington defeated Pani Kianazad. Tafan Nchukwi defeated Mike Rodriguez. And then we got to the main card. Joaquin Buckley defeated Antonio Arroyo. Nate Maness defeated Tony Gravely. Armin Sarukian defeated Christos Jagos. Ariane Lipsky defeated Mandy Bohm. Jan Kutalaba defeated Devin Clark. Anthony Smith defeated Ryan Spann in the main event. The bonuses went to Anthony Smith and Armin Sarukian, Nate Maness, and Joaquin Buckley. So that's a quick recap there. And of course, let's start off right at the top. Goes Anthony Smith versus Ryan Spann. This one had some heat going in. It had some heat coming out of it. And then both guys were able to kind of squash it.
Yeah, it was kind of odd. It was funny because, you know, Spann was kind of hurt early on, but never recovered from it, it seemed like. And Anthony Smith just kept that pressure. When he wants to be, man, he for the most part, he's a pretty smart fighter. Anthony likes to take some chances here and there, and they almost paid off in this one. But I think he had rocked them early, and I think he just kind of kept them rocked. So once he was able to finish him off, yeah, he did not really want to get out of his space, and he was talking down to him and telling him something that we figured out later. The problem is we have to figure it out later because stupid ESPN, they don't bleep words. They just bleep the whole minute. I mean, it's just it's terrible, man. Like, you never really know what's going on. So then the security came in and separated them. And after a while, I mean, I think you could tell it seemed like Spann figured things out and he just wanted to come over and squash whatever beef they had. But, it was good while it lasted. It was kind of a quick one, but the fight was interesting.
Yeah, big win for Anthony Smith. He was very, very fired up. He said he's fighting for his respect. And I think there was some pre-fight media that was done that he didn't take too kindly to. So he kind of carried that over. And a lot of fighters will sometimes make a bigger deal out of nothing. Now, I'm not saying that was the case here. And some will actually take it to heart, you know, words that are said and carry it with them, and it makes them perform better. Now, I say it in both ways because the ones that carry it with them, that's just their personality and that's them, right? But I think there's some that will actually not manufacture, but like, I guess, bring something that really, really is something that doesn't bother them, but they just need that edge, you know? So they want to be mad at you, and then they can dismiss it quickly. For Anthony Smith, I really felt like he felt kind of a little jilted, and he wanted to make good, and he wanted to make Spahn pay. So, yeah, he wins at 3:47 of the first round. He defeats Ryan Spahn. It was a submission rear naked choke, and then he kind of stood over him. Security filled up. It looked like a boxing ring. Once everyone, you know, in the black shirts between the commission and the security and the teams were inside the cage, you know, it filled up quickly, but they kept them separated. And then Spahn, I got to give him his credit. He says, I'm good, you know, let me get to him. They get to each other, and right away they had a quick exchange of words and then a couple bro hugs. And that was nice to see for them to shut it down. And just kind of learn from it. You know, are they going to be best friends after this? Who knows? I think a few weeks ago we had, who was it? Bukowskis and Jamahal Hill. Well, we had Jamahal Hill on the show, and we were talking about how later on them two kind of partied a little, you know? I don't think these two did that, but at least they squashed the beef.
I mean, it was weird because they kind of did, but then in the press conference, when Anthony brought it up again, it was kind of like, he added like a little bit more to it. So it was kind of like, well, maybe it wasn't squashed. I don't know. There's some people that like, no matter what you say, things just aren't going to be right. And that's okay. I'm okay with that because, you know, Ryan Spahn didn't have to say the things he said. Once you say that, you have to be kind of willing to accept whatever comes out of the situation. You can't cry when somebody's being mean to you after you've said certain things to that individual, right? So that's just something he's got to live with. It's his fault. He lost the fight. Anthony can say whatever he wants. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to be partying anytime soon.
For sure. And Anthony Smith said, hey, I want Alexander Rakic. He's not signed to do anything, you know. And he beat Anthony Smith. So Anthony Smith wants to get that one back. He decisioned him. Let's see here. It was last year. But it was about a year ago, actually. And so Rakic has a 2-fight win streak. He's beaten Smith and Santos. He's also won, you know, the only loss he has is Volkan Ozdemir. Otherwise, he's been on a pretty nice tear of just wins goes since 2012, Rakic. So I want to be respectful to Anthony Smith. He's a former colleague of ours at SiriusXM. I really like him. But I just think Rakic is probably looking to mix it up with someone else. Now, to be fair, Smith, the way he phrased it, was the way you want to phrase it. Hey, look, you haven't done anything yet. So if you want to get busy, let's throw down, you know? And I'm down to see that. If Rakic needs a paycheck and he wants to stay relevant, then I'm down to see him versus Anthony Smith. I think Anthony Smith has definitely earned that, you know, being a title contender at one point, a title challenger, and now winning 3 in a row. Sure, you know, I think that could maybe work. And the guys he's lost to are Rakic, Glover Teixeira, John Jones. But other than that, he's won. You know, he's got some nice wins. He's got like a 7-3 run if you want to go back to about June of 2018. If you even want to go back further to December of 2016, he's on a now I may be bleeding into his middleweight career, but he's got a – it would be like a 13-4 run. So Anthony Smith definitely is a viable contender. His name can get thrown around basically against anybody in the division.
It's interesting because you can't hate him. He called his shot, even though it sort of didn't make much sense.
Right.
But what was funny was Rakic actually responded so quickly that Bisping was able to tell him what he just tweeted was basically, I'm free in December if you want to do this, you know. So all that just happened at the spur of the moment. But that's a good example of somebody just taking the opportunity, seizing the moment, taking that opportunity and getting what they want. I mean, unless the matchmakers say, no way, we're not doing it. But it's kind of weird in the UFC now. Like, you have these fighters where, realistically, I think if I'm Rakic, I say don't take that fight. You just beat him, you know? But I think these guys want to get paid, and they don't want to just sit around. And I think a lot of them are just sitting around because of things that are happening in their divisions that are being held up sometimes. So I think that's why this fight will probably happen. But I don't know. I mean, I'll always tune in because Anthony Smith is fun to watch, and Rakic is a beast. But it doesn't really do much probably for Rakic. I think it does more for Smith. I always think, like, this fight that ended so quickly, I wonder if that dude that broke into Anthony Smith's house kind of just giggles a little bit and goes, man, I lasted longer than that. Didn't he say he went like 12 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You're right. You know, if he's with his homies, he can say, shit, I think I put up a little bit more resistance. But look, I don't know if you've ever seen Span in person, but that's a big dude, you know, so I definitely don't want to get on the wrong side of him. But yeah, that if folks don't know, about 2 years ago, maybe 18 months ago, there's a story of somebody breaking into Anthony Smith's house, and he was pretty public about it. If you want to check it out, we're obviously having a little bit of fun here. But I like Ryan Spann. I think he'll be back. And if Rakic is willing to entertain that fight, then guess we got ourselves a fight. And two guys get paid, and that's that. In the meantime, we know that Glover Teixeira and Jan Blachowicz are scheduled to get down. So, you know, it doesn't mess with any of them. And apparently Rakic isn't the backup. We found that out. So that fight's coming up here in Abu Dhabi, if I'm not mistaken, in October.
And bless you, by the way. I don't know how you were able to sneeze and keep talking. That's pretty legit. Bless you. I've only seen one other person do that in my life. I told you about the time Tommy talked and whistled at the same time.
Wait, talked and whistled?
At the same time.
How you doing?
Yeah, at the same time. It was the weirdest thing ever. He's never been able to do it ever again, but it did happen. I saw it.
Okay. All right. So let's go to the other fights that mattered on this fight card. The UFC on ESPN 30. You know which one I'm talking about, folks. It's incredible how it's called so many different names and the way it's filed, and I get a kick out of it. I was trying to pull up the light heavyweight rankings, but I'm getting stuffed here. So I'm in Paris, California, and for some reason my internet's getting throttled, and I don't want to mess with it just in case we run into any problems. But again, congratulations to Anthony Smith. And the rest of the card is as follows. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. It's like I had everything here ready. Oh, here it is. Jan Kutalaba. So Jan Kutalaba goes, says, how about you and me, to Anthony Smith? And I like his intensity, guys. He, you know, he's the one that dresses up as the Hulk, and he's so aggressive, and he loves to shove or put his forehead in your forehead. I mean, you know, I don't like it when it ruins a fight, and I don't like it when it spills over, but I do love his intensity. And I wouldn't mind him versus Anthony Smith either. Good win for him, by the way, over Devin Clark. And yeah, what'd you think?
You know, he had a kind of an interesting post-fight interview as well, because he had his translator all ready to go, and he said, no, I'm going to do it in English. And he actually did it in English. And there were some funny moments, but I appreciated the fact that he did that. It was nice to see Eric Nixick in his corner. And, you know, the kid's got a lot of confidence right now, and rightfully so. Like, you could tell he's getting better. He's doing things to his game. It was a good fight. It's a good victory. Seeing him and Anthony Smith, I mean, I'm not going to hate on it. It'll probably be a good fight. I just don't think they'll put it together.
Me neither. He took a shot, though, and it's on the same card, so it's on the same timeline. And, you know, it made sense to at least put it out there. Arian Lipsky defeated Mandy Baum. Armin Sarukian defeated Christos Jagos. Yeah, Christos Jagos is a guy we know through the SoCal region. And he lost the TKO strike fight in round one there. Sarukian got himself a bonus. Any thoughts on this one?
You know, it's interesting because the whole card. So when I looked at the card top top to bottom, there were a lot of huge favorites. And the underdogs, I felt like, didn't deserve to be that low on the underdogs. But it didn't really play out that way, man. I think the favorites just kind of did what they were supposed to do. So the fights overall, they were interesting, but you kind of just felt like you knew who was going to win almost the whole night, you know? Not every fight, but for the most part, yeah, they were kind of like that. This was one of those.
I wanted Giagos to win. I had included him in a parlay, and I think it was just – I was just feeling the SoCal love, so I was a little bit bummed out. But I was very impressed and have been impressed with Armin Sarukian, who now is 17-2 overall. And then for Christos Giagos, you know, that guy's taken the long road. You know, he's got almost 30 fights, and it took him a while to get to the UFC, but he definitely belonged in the UFC. And I would have loved for him to go, you know, to take his streak to 5 out of 6 and 3 in a row. So this setback hurts a little bit, but, you know, he'll be back. And if I'm not mistaken, we may have even called 2 of his fights at Badby. I know we called one of them. But, yeah, this one, you know, I was kind of homering for him a little bit the same way I've homered before for Christian Aguilera, who I don't know if you know, goes, but he got cut in June because he had a few losses pile up. So, anyway, Giagos is safe, but congrats to Sarukian for that win. And then I guess one other fight I want to jump to is Raquel Pennington versus Pani Kianizad. Boy, Pennington won't go away, and I really like her. You know what I mean? She's been in the UFC for quite a while, and she always wins at the right time. Pani Kianizad, you know, she came through the reality show, and even though she came up short in the Ultimate Fighter finale, she's kind of done well for herself. She had won 4 in a row, so this one kind of stings. It takes a little bit of the wind out of her sail. But at least she lost to a solid opponent in Raquel Pennington.
Yeah, but Pani, so the thing about Pani is you can tell that she's still getting better. She's still making improvements to her game. I think she, on the show, she just seemed like she kind of lacked like a little bit of explosiveness in her game. And she's getting meaner, she's getting tougher, and her skills are starting to come around. But in this particular fight, Raquel Pennington just had a little bit too much. It was a close fight. But Raquel, the thing about her is I still feel like we haven't captured what we used to have with her. There's something going on with her where maybe she's just not pulling the trigger. I don't know what's going on with her, but props to her for getting the victory and getting things back on track, but it's not the same Raquel Pennington that we're used to. Like, I don't feel like that fires her still.
We used to talk about it more in the past. We haven't in a while, but it still holds up. And that's that one fight where you leave something of yourself there. And I think she left something of herself in Brazil when she fought Amanda Nunes. Remember that fight could have been stopped between rounds 4 and 5, and it was controversial. And in the end, I don't think anyone said it was, well, no, I take it back. People did say that the coach should have stopped it, but I don't think it was anything that was too over the top. Like, get that coach out of the sport. It wasn't anything like that. It was just opinions. And I had discussed with a couple of coaches who told me they agreed with Pennington's coach and with Pennington, you know, going out there, you know, for that 5th round. But still, that was a pretty thorough ass kicking. And I think maybe some of her was left there. But credit to her, she's still chugging along. She's still a prize fighter. She's still cashing checks. And now she's won 3 of 4 over good fighters, too. Irene Aldana, Marion Renault, and Pani Kianizad. And only mixed in there, you know, in the last 2 years is a loss to Holly Holm.
Yeah, I just she reminds me of one of these people that the UFC where eventually they're going to make too much money, but what they bring in as far as value of people wanting to watch them fight and all that isn't going to match up. So right. she needs to be exciting again. She needs to do something to even that out.
Okay, fair enough. Any other fights that you want to discuss where I can get into this Mike Bond article that I think I had said a few months back? I want to do this every time because he does a great job of recapping some finer points of each event that I think are very, very interesting, whether it's the Buckley finish. I mentioned Raquel Pennington. I really wanted JP Bay to match, you know, the win that his wife recently picked up what's her name again? Charmaine? Holy cow.
Tisha.
No. What's JP Bay's?
Oh, JP Cheyenne.
Cheyenne, yeah. I'm thinking Charmaine. What am I? Martin? Wasn't that his? No. Who is Charmaine was from Different Strokes. I think that Charlene or something like that. I was mixing up too many names. Cheyenne Bays. She used to be Cheyenne Ballismus when we covered her at Tough Enough. So yeah, Cheyenne Bays. Love her, man. She's awesome. So I wanted JP to get the win, but Montel Jackson got that unanimous decision win. Gustavo Lopez, obviously, I was cheering for him. That ended in a draw. But any more thoughts there on any of those fights?
The Gustavo Lopez fight was fun. I understand why they called it that way. But that kid, he's just kind of had it a little bit rough. You know, I think one of them was a short notice. I think you have something there. I think that's a kid that still will get better. So hopefully, barring anything a little crazy, I think he should get another shot. I mean, I don't know what kind of contract he came in on, but I think this was his third one. I'd like to see him get more time because I think that he is going to get better, and I think he is tough.
Right. And that first guy was Merab Dvalishvili, if you recall. That is a joke of a fight there. After that, he beat Anthony Berchek, and then he lost to Adrian Yanez. That was a KO finish back in March. I'm glad he took some time off before he fought this fight. So technically, he's 1-2-1. I think he should be able to, because he took the Dvalishvili fight early, late. I think he should be able to survive this. And, you know, I don't know if that means he has to sign a new four-fight contract. I don't even know his contract status, but I'd love to see him get another fight for sure or a new contract. He's a local guy, and his fights are interesting. Even when he's lost, I think he's put up a good fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he should get some more.
Yeah. All right. So here's an article that Mike Bond, our fantastic writer at MMA Junkie. We used to kind of almost call him like a stats guy, but man, has he evolved. He can do editor on duty shifts. He's great, you know, reporting. He does the Twitter reactions, but one of my favorite pieces that he does is the post-event facts. So let me just read through a few of these. You can stop me if at some point you're not having any more fun goes, but here we go. The compliance payout. So that's basically Venom now. It used to be the Reebok payout. It totaled $162,000 for all of the fighters that participated on Saturday night. Now, we had six on the main the main card, and then we had a total of eight on the undercard. So $162,000 was paid out to basically 28 fighters on Saturday night. Debuting fighters went 1-2 at the event. I already told you guys who the bonuses are, and that's Manis, Sarukian, Buckley, and what am I missing? Smith, that's right, $50,000 each. The UFC sold VIP tickets to fans for this UFC Fight Night 192 card, but the promotion did not make public the total number of tickets sold or the gate. So they're generating a small gate and a small attendance, but they don't want to say, we had 82 VIPs and made 12,000. You know, I don't think they're bothering with it. But at least they're making it available for some people on a Saturday night to go in there and watch some fights. So good on them. Betting favorites went 10-3 on the card. Remember, one of those fights ended in a draw. The betting favorites improved to 20-10 with no contest in UFC headliners this week. This year, excuse me. So 20-10 with one no contest in UFC headliners this year. The total fight time for the 14-bout card was 2 hours, 32 minutes, and 2 seconds. And Anthony Smith, he's now 5-3 in UFC main events. Wow, he's been in 8 main events, goes. That's a pretty impressive stat. Mm-hmm. He improved to 7-3 since moving up to light heavyweight. I think I mentioned that in June of 2018. Smith is now 11-5 since he returned to the UFC for a second stint in February of 2016. And he's 18-4 since he was first released by the UFC in June of 2013. So if you want to go back to whoever released him, you'd probably go, you kind of made a mistake back there, pal. But he earned his way back, and he's been a stud. Smith has earned 33 of his 35 career victories by stoppage. That's what I'm talking about, Goes. That's a stat right there.
A good stat. A stat that if you're an employer, you want to have a guy like that on your staff because that's what sells tickets. That's why people show up.
For sure. That includes 11 of his 12 UFC wins, but he's been consistent whether it's in the UFC or outside the UFC. The guy's a finisher. Smith's seven stoppages in the UFC light heavyweight division since 2018 are the most in the division since 2018. So he's actually one of their hot tickets, one of their hot items, and that's why he's doing a lot of these main events. Spahn has suffered losses in has suffered both of his UFC losses by knockout. So the two times he's lost in the UFC, both were via KO. Jan Kutalaba, who's now 16-6-1 in MMA, 5-5-1 in the UFC, he snapped his three-fight winless streak. So he's won for the first time since September of 2019. You know, Goes, we may go and turn the page from week to week, but we get a check, you know, for every month that we work. And a lot of these guys do when they fight, but this is the first time basically in 2 years that Jan Kutalaba cashed two checks. So imagine how much that meant to him and how much some of these little bits and pieces about each guy and gal's career gets swept under the rug.
I think really like when you go that long, it probably feels like you won a bonus, you know, like a fight of the night bonus or something. That's such a big deal. I mean, man, I just feel bad fighters have to go through that.
For sure. Oh, that's an extra paycheck, man, to take home. Kutalaba has now earned two of his five UFC victories by decision. Devin Clark, 12-6, 6-6 in the UFC. He suffered consecutive losses for the first time in his career. Clark suffered the first decision loss of his career. Ariane Lipsky has earned two of her three UFC victories by decision. Mandy Baum had her seven-fight winning streak snapped for the first defeat of her career. Sarukian, who's 17-2 overall, 4-1 in UFC, his four-fight UFC winning streak in the lightweight is tied for fourth longest active streak in the division, behind Charles Oliveira, who's got 9, Islam Makhachev, who's got 8, and Benil Dariush, who's got 7. So that's kind of impressive. Notice I didn't say Poirier, Gaethje, McGregor, Ferguson. I didn't say any of those guys. They don't have four or five win streaks like this guy does. This guy's quietly reminding me of where Islam Makhachev was a few years ago.
That's a very impressive stat, yeah.
Yep. He earned his first stoppage victory of his UFC career after basically winning the rest of his fights by a decision. And that's good. You want to start winning some by finish and not winning them all by decision if you want to start making some sort of a title run. Christos Giagos fell to 4-3 since he returned to the UFC for a second stint in September of 2018. Buckley, who's 13-4 and 3-2 overall, he has earned all 10 of his career stoppage victories by KO. So he's not a submission whiz, but he definitely is a KO artist. That includes three of his UFC wins. Antonio Arroyo's three-fight losing skid is the longest of his career. He hasn't earned a victory since July of 2019. So he's feeling it. He's 0-3 in the UFC, Goes. He might be on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple more here. Raquel Pennington, 9 victories in the UFC's women's bantamweight competition. Our second most in divisional history behind Amanda Nunes' 11. That's not bad company there. Pennington has earned 7 of her 9 victories by decision. Pennington's total fight time, 3 hours, 22 minutes, and 33 seconds in the UFC's bantamweight competition is the most in that division's history.
I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, there's more there that you can check out on our front page of MMA Junkie. Go in there and check out the post-fight facts of this fight card. Big touch of gloves to Mike Bond for that. All right, the same night we had Bellator 266. Man, Goes, Georgi Karakanyan was carrying some, you know, I think he was 4-1 since moving up to lightweight, or maybe he was going to be 4-1. I forget. We were talking to him about a week ago. He felt like he had something for Saul Rogers, but Saul Rogers, he just out-wrestled him. Georgie could not stop him, and Saul not only would take him down, but he would kind of beat him up a little bit, threaten a little bit with, you know, going for maybe his neck. But Georgie, the savage veteran that he is, the savvy veteran that he is, he would fight it off, get back up, but then Rogers would rinse and repeat. Now, that said, Kyrkine had some moments, goes some flying knees right up the middle that rocked Saul Rogers. And the crowd at San Jose went nuts, and I thought Georgie was going to come back because I felt like he needed that finish. But credit to Saul Rogers, formerly of the Ultimate Fighter, for coming through. He deserved to get his hand raised.
I think this is a fight where weight was a big issue. You know, he just looked like he was the bigger guy, Saul Rogers. And, but then again, you know, Georgie took this one a little bit on shorter notice. So there's a lot of things going on there, but overall, it was fun that Georgie was sort of being dominated, but had moments where he made it interesting. So, yeah, it was a fun fight overall.
Didn't he tell us that this fight takes him into free agency too? I mean,
yeah, that's the thing. He kind of rolled the dice on himself, you know?
Right. So let's hope that it sounds like he wants to stay with Bellator. Let's hope that Bellator wants to keep him around because he's always been a guy that tests somebody who finds out he's not ready for the top competition, or they win at the expense of Georgie Karakanyan, but it's almost like Georgie Karakanyan gives them an endorsement. Some might call it a gatekeeper. Others don't like that. I don't think it's too disrespectful because if it's a gatekeeper to the title, it does mean you're a bad mofo. It means you're usually in the top five, top 10. Of that division, you just haven't been able to become number one or number two. He has won a major belt, though. You can never take that World Series of Fighting title away from him. So he definitely has nothing to be ashamed of. And I know he's starting to wind down his career a little bit, but again, I hope he gets a new contract.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Deanna Bennett, the local fighter out of San Jose. This was a big night for her. She was fighting for the memory of her father, who was a police officer in the Bay Area. And she was carrying his badge. She told the story of him working that that arena back in the day when Cyborg and Carano fought there, and him telling her, "I think one day, you know, you could do that." And so he never got to see her fight in that arena. He recently passed away, but she went up against a tough customer in Alejandra Lara. She had some nice head kicks. Some nice body kicks, but Deanna Bennett just kind of out-toughed her and won probably the biggest fight of her career, and the arena was rocking and rolling for her.
Sometimes the stars just seem to align for you, and I'm not sure if they fought 10 times, the fights would go that way every single time, but this night it did, and that's what mattered. It was a touching story that you're going to remember. You'll remember the next time she goes into the cage. It was a good night.
Yeah, her holding the badge, man, that was pretty special. And obviously a shout-out always to the men and women in blue. I feel like a lot of you guys get lumped into the group that, you know, that might be called bad apples. And I know that that's definitely a huge minority. So many of the law enforcement in our country just get up and do a great job protecting us, man. So shout out to all them. Did you see Ulysses Gomez, by the way, if I can pivot for a second? He was on some sort of a poster. I think it was like a recruiting poster for Las Vegas Metro. I thought it looked pretty cool for them to feature him. You know, he's in shape. He had a smile on his face and people had some nice comments. I saw it on social media. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it, but I didn't know that's what it was.
That's what it looked like. Oh, no, it looked like they were doing a recruiting in Southern California, letting people know, hey, look, if you want to be a police officer or law enforcement in Las Vegas, you know, they're expanding. The city's growing, so they're probably looking to add, you know, but they used his face. So usually we see him on fight posters. Now this was recruiting for law enforcement. So shout out to Ulysses Gomez. Have you talked to him lately?
I say hi to him every now and again, yeah.
Yeah, we need to have another breakfast over at the big – what was it we went to? The Black Bear Diner once with him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, back to these Bellator fights, Bellator 266 at in San Jose. What's the name of the arena? SAP Center, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. We're at the co-main event with Neiman Gracie and Mark Leminger. Goes, how many times have you ever asked the Gracie, you got hands or what? I mean, maybe not that directly, but we're kind of wondering it. Everybody's wondering it because we know they're beasts on the ground, but we're always wondering, do you got hands or not? Can you throw a kick? Can you throw a knee? And many Gracies have told us, oh, yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And, of course, they usually wind up just choking someone out and moving on. You know, Gracie family is super, super successful. But Neiman Gracie wasn't playing around. He actually showed some hands. He put away Mark Leminger, basically like a standing TKO. Referee Jason Herzog finally had to get in the way. But Gracie went nuts, man. He was yelling, Paul-ha, kind of like with Christian Copperheart, old school tag radio and MMA junkie radio caller used to Doppelhada or something like that, right? I kept hearing him yell that.
Well, it was the uppercut, I think, is what did the damage, the first one. Yeah. And then he was able to land some other shots, but then he threw the uppercut again, and I think that's what kind of finished the dude off. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the perfect situation you would want if you're Neiman Gracie. He was able to tie him up, get him up against the cage, but he used his striking versus his grappling to get him down. And, I mean, you saw how happy that he was getting that reaction. And it was kind of cool to see, like, his teammates. Saw Marvin Vettori saying some really nice things, watching the fight as well. And then to see his coaches, you know, and to see his Uncle Henzo and Master Rafael Cordero. The dude definitely puts his time. So to see him get that type of result was really, really cool. But here's the thing, man, not to be a stormy cloud or anything like that, but he needs a big win. You know, I don't know that this is a huge name to get a win over. Now, granted, he did dispatch of him, right? That's what you do. But you want to see Neiman take that next step. So hopefully whoever is next for him, you know, he had a little call out at the end of the fight. Hopefully if all that comes true, hopefully he can keep doing this.
He shouted out three names. One of them, he wants to run it back with Jason Jackson from Henry Hooft's gym. Jackson put an L on him recently. He also called out MVP. Nothing wrong with that, you know. I think MVP is a little closer to a title shot than he is to, you know, looking down a few spots at someone like Neiman Gracie. No disrespect. But then he also said, well, if not any of them, then Yaroslav Amazov, the champion, you know, who just defeated Douglas Lima, how about you? So take your chance. Throw it out there. Throw it in the existence and see what happens. There's three names for Twitter to throw out there and see if any of them, you know, respond. And we'll see. That's one of their deeper divisions over at Bellator. They just had a Grand Prix. They have a new champion. They have some studs. They've lost a couple, you know, Rory McDonald. Moved over to PFL. Paul Daly, you feel like it's always going to be his last fight, but there's some talent there. Let's see if one of those comes through for him. But that's how you get it done. A nice call out and a nice finish, especially for a Gracie that can strike. You don't see those very, very often.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're at the main event, Yoel Romero versus Phil Davis. And it was funny because I think I had said, watch out, this fight could be very slow. Phil Davis is methodical. He likes to kickbox. He doesn't wrestle too often. And it's 50-50 whether he's going to be on the side of the decision or not. And the first round was kind of like that. Yoel Romero was kind of, I don't know, I can't tell if he's goofing or not. You know, he has his hands up high, and then he explodes from time to time, and he throws these winging left hooks and right hooks. And everybody goes, ooh, and ah, and you can almost feel the air buzzing as he does it. But that first round kind of felt like validated what I said. Like, be careful, this is what it could be. But then the fight picked up. It picked up really nicely. And Phil Davis showed us that he wasn't going to be hesitant and leave the fight in the judge's hands, although that's exactly what he did. But he wanted to, I think, get after it more. So he secured the first two rounds, at least according to Big John McCarthy's card. I thought there was one round where I thought there was a chance it could be 1-1 going into round three. And then in round three, Yoel Romero did go after it pretty good. But it was only the first part of the round. Phil Davis, he had other plans. He wrestled, and he took this kid down. kid. He's 44. He took this man down over and over. The NC2A Division One champ took down the Olympic silver medalist five times, which is very, very impressive. And pummeled him from on top. So he secured the fight. And then, of course, we have a little bit of controversy because Romero's running around like, I thought we were going five. And it's kind of ridiculous at the level. Like, you would think he would know that. But then again, sometimes Yoel, you know, does seem like he just marches to the beat of his own drum. It almost sounds like believable that he may really have had that type of confusion. I don't know. What'd you think of the fight? What'd you think of his comments where he thought they were supposed to go another two?
I was pulling my hair out because even up until a minute before the fight went off, I was talking to a few friends and Showtime, one of our listeners here, and I was trying to give them an honest breakdown of the fight. I have problems with both of these guys because you're never really sure what you're going to get from them. And so the way I looked at it before the fight, which I was absolutely wrong, was I just felt like guys who pressure Phil Davis usually get the best of him. Yoel Romero is one of those guys that pressures. However, lately he just hasn't been pulling the trigger. Takes him a while to get warmed up. In a three-round fight, that's a big deal. You can't just give away a round in a three-round fight. However, he did not have that mentality. He thought it was a five-round fight. I kind of believe it, the way he fought. I believe it. He can kind of sometimes be like that. I thought it was ridiculous. If you have money on that fight, the last thing you want to hear come out of his mouth is something like that. Because now you're thinking, man, so he had something left in the gas tank that he was going to unleash. He just didn't know how many rounds there were in the fight. Like, that was infuriating. It was a really tough fight to call going in. I thought Phil handled his business the way he needed to. But I think Yoel Romero could have been more aggressive, and I think he could have caused more problems for Phil. He just didn't do it. I honestly don't like 205 Yoel Romero.
He still looked well put together, but he looked just, I don't know. Like, you know what he looked like? He looked like if he was a middleweight and didn't do a camp.
Yeah, he looked like he was just he was lacking the explosion. I think he just felt that extra weight. And Scott Coker kind of alluded after the broadcast that he wouldn't mind if he stayed at 205. And I kind of disagree. I think there are more things for him at 185. I think if he goes down to 185, we can almost sort of pretend this didn't even happen. Really, you just go, oh, man, I was fooling about. Kind of like Israel Adesanya when he went up to 205, right? Now that he's back down at 185, that's where he handles business. I think we can all just kind of forget about what happened with Mr. Wonderful. But I want to see him go down to 185. He just didn't have explosion. He really wasn't fighting all that much. When he did, he looked okay. But this is the first fight where I feel like we really started to see his age a little bit, which is something that he has eluded for the longest time.
To be fair, I remember doing a spinning backlick, I believe, or maybe it was a Junkie Radio show, and I felt like he was playing with house money, that he could still fight Gegard Mousasi because he's a big name, and maybe even coming off a loss to Phil Davis. However, I would have preferred a more competitive loss, maybe like a something like you felt like was a fight of the night. I mean, I know they don't do that official bonus, but something where you were left buzzing because it was a close fight, maybe a split decision. They gave it to Phil, and you felt like Yoel could kind of take some of that momentum to middleweight, you know, maybe challenge Gegard. But that didn't happen. I suppose they could force feed it to us. It would remind me of when Aldo lost to Marais, and then they gave him a shot versus Peter Yan, you know. And I think Dana said, what do you want from us? He's Jose Aldo, for crying out loud. WEC legend, UFC legend. We're just going to run with it. And I think we all said, all right, you know, he is Jose Aldo. Well, look, I don't know if I'm ready to put Yoel Romero on that pedestal because the only major title he won was the Strikeforce light heavyweight title. I'm not disrespecting that title. What I mean is he won it and that was it. There wasn't like title defenses. There wasn't the run that Jose Aldo had. But he is Yoel Romero. I think we all categorize him as one of the more terrifying humans on the planet, and that's why he's kind of beloved. So, you know, they probably could give it to us, and I think we'd all be excited to see Romero versus Mousasi for the middleweight title.
Man, I don't know if you can do that, but I don't feel like I feel like he would just be one win away. You know, you just give him somebody that you know he could take and be and hopefully make weight and all that because he's going to be older. You know, it's going to be harder and harder every single time. But I'd rather see him at 185. I don't care to see him at 205 ever again.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Gegard Mousasi at middleweight, right? You don't like that fight?
I think you should go a little lower.
Lower than middleweight?
No. Just not as high caliber opponent.
Oh, kind of like a tune-up fight. Let him win and then fight Mousasi.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's that Dutch kickboxer that always gets thrown in there? I swear it goes. I think I have I'm going to let the audience in on something. Maybe you too. I may actually have that brain fog. I swear to God I space it on some of these names. And then I recover. It's there, you know. But who am I thinking of? You know what I'm thinking of?
I've been doing that a lot lately. But even with people in just regular life. Like the other day, I couldn't remember Dave Manley's name. It took me a while, and I was like, bobblehead guy. Like, I do it a lot. I just think our brains aren't meant to have as much information that's being funneled right now. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Back in the day, you just had to remember the people that you saw face-to-face, right? You didn't remember some dude from Florida, or you didn't have friends all the way over there, that many, you know, people that you talked to. It's too much for our brains, man, to remember. And then everybody gets scared. They're like, something wrong with me, something wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with you, man. It's just there's just too much going on.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying here, and it ain't Rosenstruck, and it ain't Tyron Spong. I believe he's from Suriname, and we've covered him before. Oh, Melvin Manhoff. That's what I was going to say. Melvin Manhoff usually seems to be somebody that you throw in there with someone – who you know he'll give you a good fight, and then if he wins, maybe you give him it gives him that fighter a little bit of shine. Maybe Yoel Romero versus a Melvin Manhoff. Let's get both of these guys paid, and if he can beat him, then him versus Mousasi. You're talking about something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I could be talked into just straight title fight or a tune-up fight. We'll see, but. Definitely we won't be seeing Romero versus Anthony Johnson, which was the original mouth-watering fight that was supposed to take place. Heck, I think it was part of the light heavyweight Grand Prix, if I'm not mistaken. And then things got shifted around. And now not only is Romero – he wasn't featured in the Grand Prix. He fought someone who lost in the Grand Prix, and that's Phil Davis. So now he may go to middleweight. And then Anthony Johnson, apparently he's got an illness, which he hasn't disclosed. Doesn't appear to be COVID, but he says, pray for me, man. Think of me. Give me some positive vibes. I'm not doing too well, so I want to extend to Anthony Johnson exactly that. I will say a prayer later on, and I will think positively towards him that whatever he is, he kicks its butt the same way he's kicked butt in the octagon, and I'm sure he'll do in the Bellator cage when he comes back. But, yeah, that's serious stuff. He was supposed to – think about how big that fight was, goes. It was coming up here in October, less than a month or about a month. He was going to fight Ryan Bader, not only for Nemkov. He was fighting Nemkov, Vadim Nemkov, for his title and to move on to the finals of the $1 million Grand Prix. So this was arguably one of Anthony Johnson's biggest fights. And remember, he's been in some title fights in the UFC, but a lot was at stake here. So for him to pull out, you had to know this was serious. Man, I was sad to hear that.
Well, you gotta imagine, like, go back to when he was a free agent. I have to imagine getting into a Grand Prix with the opportunity to win $1 million plays a big role in whether or not you want to take the step back into MMA and do all that. So now that he's out, I mean, boy, that's got to be a real big rain cloud on his whole situation. But I think he did rule out – I'm pretty sure he ruled out COVID. But when you're asking people for prayers, it means something's pretty serious. So our hearts go out to him, to his family, and hopefully he's okay. You know, if there's anybody that can battle through tough times, it's Anthony Johnson. So we'll see here.
Julius Anglicus will step in – for Anthony Johnson, and he'll face Vadim Nemkov in that title fight, which is also a semifinal for the Bellator Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. Good luck to them. Bader's still matched up against Corey Anderson. These things happen in Grand Prix, folks. How about Demetrius Johnson? He's going to be facing Muay Thai star Rotang over at ONE Championship in a hybrid match that has four rounds, 3 minutes each. They'll start off with Muay Thai for 3 minutes, then they'll go to MMA for 3 minutes, then back to Muay Thai for 3 minutes, then back to MMA for 3 minutes. We talked to a DJ, and he said, why not? He goes, at this point in time, I feel like what he's saying is, I've already done all kinds of, you know, amazing things in MMA. Now it's just time to have fun and just challenge myself because I'm obviously not going to do this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, when you have somebody like him that's been as dominant as he has in mixed martial arts, things haven't been going his way as of late, but he just went through a stretch where he made everything look so easy. And you know the type of individual that he is. He wasn't just coasting. You know, he was putting a lot of effort into every training camp, no matter who it was. And I think he got a little burned out. So I like this type of matchup because it's a different type of challenge that I think we'll really get him motivated and pull out a different Demetrius Johnson out of him. So it's interesting. You know, I believe that the fact that they want the first round to be Muay Thai says a lot about who they think is the better fighter overall here, right? So
right.
I think DJ said some pretty interesting things in our interview. One was don't expect him to run around in round one. He says he's going to come at this guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the most intelligent game plan in the world. But who am I to tell Demetrius Johnson, one of the Mount Rushmore guys, one of the greatest of all time, what to do? It's going to be fun. And I like that ONE Championship is doing something like this to kind of shake things up. It's enough to make me for sure say, I can't miss this. I really want to tune into this.
Yeah. And DJ is a champion over at ONE. He's not the undisputed flyweight champion, but he is a Grand Prix champion over at Bellator, and that's how he got the shot to fight Adriano Moraes. So he does have a belt, and of course, Rotang Jitmunyong, he's the current ONE flyweight Muay Thai world champion. Because remember, they're doing hybrid cards. They are featuring, you know, kickboxing and Muay Thai heavily over at ONE Championship. So hopefully, they take our advice and come up with some sort of a belt. Goes, there's two badasses over there fighting a hybrid match. They need to come up with a belt the same way the UFC came up with a belt for Masvidal versus Nate Diaz. Let's do something special. This is the 10-year anniversary for ONE Championship, and that's why they went outside the box and decided to have this this hybrid card. So good on that. All right, I want to close with something special, but first let's talk to Marcus Almeida. He's going to be debuting at ONE Championship on September 24th. So we're going to do a quick catch up there with him. He's debuting. He's one of the all-time greatest Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and submission grappling practitioners. And then we'll close out with some kind words to two big fighters that retired this past week. Let's talk to Marcus Almeida. All right, Junkie Nation, Gorgeous George and Goes are back at it again. We have Marcus Almeida, also known as Marcus Buchecha, who's going to be fighting Anderson Silva on September 24th at ONE Championship. It's their Revolution card. So we're less than a week away, and we want to thank you for the time. Marcus, how are you?
Very good. How about you guys? How's everything?
Good. Did I pronounce it right? Buchecha? Buqueca? I think it's Buqueca, right? That sounds better.
No, Buchecha.
Buchecha. Disculpa.
Yeah. No, right. Oh, good. No. But Americans have a hard time to say that, so that's all. Everybody say Buchecha. But
yeah.
In Portuguese is Buchecha.
But in our defense, Brazilians have a problem with ours. You guys say Royce. We say Royce. No, I'm just kidding. You know, yeah. I'm just messing around. Marcus, we're really excited to have you. Of course, you are one of those Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champions that everybody's heard about, and you've done everything there needs to be done in that sport, and now you're coming over to MMA. I wanted to ask you, what do you feel, who do you feel like you might be similar to in regards to other world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters who have come over to mixed martial arts, like Cron Gracie, Jacare Souza, Hodger Gracie, Damian Maia? Do you feel like there's one in particular that you're similar to?
It's hard to say, especially because I didn't fight yet, but all the names that you said, they are big names that for sure gave a lot of inspiration for me to follow, like Damian Maia, Jacare, Charles do Bronx, Gilbert Burns, Cara de Sapato, all guys that came from jiu-jitsu and they did and are doing good MMA, so all big names to look up to.
You know, the one thing I've noticed is the ones that immerse themselves with wrestling sooner rather than later seem to have a little bit more success. Would you not agree? Because now you kind of dictate the terms of taking somebody down versus letting them take you down and then obviously working off your back, which is very dangerous. I know that, but it seems like Top Game seems to carry more weight for judging and things like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially for judging, if you're on top, it's better and looks better too. But you have to be ready for any situation, for everything, right? So you doesn't really matter. You have to be ready, right?
Yeah. Do you wrestle a lot? Have you wrestled a lot, in your preparation for your MMA career?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm training at American Top Team. Since I got my black belt, I'm training with Leo Vieira, my jiu-jitsu coach, my master, right? My jiu-jitsu coach. And now I'm training at ATT. I train a lot with Steve Moco, so a great name, like a legend on wrestling. So I'm learning a lot with him. So it's been great. Always be, like you said, you know, if you want to use the jiu-jitsu, you need to be able to take the fight to the ground. So if you know wrestling, if you're training wrestling, that's I think the easiest way to get the fight where you want.
How about our good friend King Mo? Have you had a chance to roll with him?
Yeah, for sure. I forgot to mention King Mo. I train with him a lot, and he's one of the coaches there. And he has a lot of knowledge as well.
Yeah.
Fought a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, so it's always good. I get tips from him and get some
That's
knowledge
great.
From him.
Those are some great names that you named. And so let me ask you one more here, and then I'll turn it over to Goz. Now you get to take somebody down and punch them in the face if you want, or elbow in the face. You can cause damage. And in your opinion, is that something that you strive to do? So if you get a takedown, are you looking to maybe damage first? Or do you think jiu-jitsu still, you'll let jiu-jitsu flow before you even turn to striking from the top? Like, what seems to come more natural nowadays as you've gotten more sparring rounds?
Whatever it takes, right? So I do what I have to do, and if I have to punch, if I have to do that on the ground, I'll do it. But I think my instinct is, like, of course, always to use the jiu-jitsu, but that's not a jiu-jitsu match. That's not a grappling match. So like you said, it's MMA. You have to do everything. You have to use everything.
Marcus, we're getting closer, but I was curious about your mental state, your emotions. How do you feel? How can you maybe describe the feeling of the moments before a big jiu-jitsu match versus getting closer to an MMA match? Is competition? Is it the same similar feeling, or does it feel completely different?
For now it's been really similar, but it's couple of days away yet, right? I don't know how it's gonna be the fight day, one day before, because that's gonna be my first time. But for now, so far, it's been similar. I'm really calm because I used to do this for a long time, competing since I was like 14 years old. So a competition mindset for now, I'm trying to use the same, even though being a different sport, I'm trying to keep the same mindset, because the man who suffers, like, anticipate suffers more than necessary, right? So there's no reason to suffer before the right time, to be nervous, to be anxious days before the fight. So you let that for the fight day, or if possible, keep calm as much as you can before the fight. So I think that will make everything easier.
You definitely have a different mindset than some of us in the media, fans. When someone like you gets signed to a promotion, we always think 3-4 steps ahead. We look at the future of things that we can see from you. But I know that you have to focus on your opponent at hand. But do you also kind of have that feeling of, I know you want to focus on your opponent, but there's so many possibilities for you in this organization and the future and things to come. Is it tough to not think about that, the future, what could be coming?
No, of course. When you think about future, it's always expect the best. But, man, I remember when I was blue belt, if you ask me, like, what's your dream? My dream is to be a blue belt world champion, not a black belt world champion. You know what I mean? Because I was blue belt at the time. So right now it's the same thing. What's your goal? What are you expecting? For now, I expect to make the debut happen, because it's supposed to be February and we are in September, almost October, and I didn't fight yet. So right now my focus 100% is to fight this debut, to make it happen finally. And then after that, I think about my second step, my second fight, and then step by step. But I'm not rushing. I want to take one step at a time.
Have any of your friends that maybe don't follow the sport as closely had any confusion because you're fighting Anderson Silva, and obviously it's not Spider Silva, it's another fighter. Has there been any confusion just with your casual friends and family?
And being honest, I don't know, because like I don't care what like people are thinking about. I just came here to try and not to look much at social media right now, because you know what I mean, I'm focused on this. So but nobody asked yet, because Anderson, it's really known in Brazil, so everybody knows that people know him by his nickname, so not the name. So I think there is no much confusion.
Yeah, it's like fighting a John Smith in the United States or a Magomed Magomedov in Dagestan. Sounds like Anderson Silva is kind of a common name in Brazil.
Not that common, but they use more for his nickname. So they don't use Anderson Silva for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I do want to say, I want to follow up on what Go's question asked you about. You know, Gary Tonin, I think, might have a title fight coming up. And the ONE Championship pushed him good, you know, and he's 6-0 as a professional. So in a couple of years, maybe in 18 months to 2 years, if things go well for you, Marcus, you could be fighting for a world title soon too.
Yeah, why not? Always the expectations are the best. So like you said, why not? But we have a long, long way ahead before that. So that's why I keep grounding and my feet on the ground and work step by step, little by little.
Definitely. Well, we look forward to your debut at ONE Championship Revolution, and that's on 9/24, September 24th, folks. So we're not very far away here. It's coming up within a week, and it'll be an 8:30 a.m. Eastern start time on Friday for those of us here in North America. Of course, the fights are taking place in Singapore. And Marcus, we want to thank you so much for joining us here on MMA Junkie Radio. Nice to meet you, and have a safe weight cut, and have a great fight at ONE Revolution on September 24th. We'll talk to you soon. Well, you could tell it's fight week. He seems focused and didn't want to get ahead of himself in terms of anything else other than Anderson Silva. Not the Spider. Braddock is the one he's facing. But, I think he knows, you know, that this is just a whole different ballgame. He probably doesn't want to get caught up in saying too much. You could tell he was focused.
Yeah, he's dialed in. I mean, it's got to be a nerve-wracking situation for him. So I think he's just a dialed-in kid right now, and we'll see how he does.
Yeah. All right. So thanks to Almeida and, of course, the ONE Championship team for setting that up. And I do want to exit with this. We won't have much time. Look, my 49ers are 2-0. Goes as Redskins got a win. USC bounced back nicely. They were down 14-0. And then what they put 45 straight on Washington State. But goes, if they had lost that Washington State game, oh man, I think Dante Williams, the interim head coach, he may have been let go too.
Yeah, that was scary. You know, when your quarterback goes down on the first series, you don't really expect something like that when your coach gets let go during the week. So props to them for coming back and doing that.
Yeah, that Jackson Dart stepped in nicely, over 300 yards, three TDs. He's only a freshman. Good on him. And speaking of quarterbacks, my godson, Logan Gonzalez, led the Olu Lancers to another victory. He had three TDs himself. I was out in L.A. to check out that game. Good for him. Now he has to start Trinity League, but he has a bye week to rest. And finally, Manchester United, man, they pulled it out. They're still road warriors. I think they're on 30 games in a row where they've either won or drew. It makes it worth it to wake up 6 a.m. on a Sunday. It's not easy, but they did it. I could not believe that it came down to David De Gea stopping a penalty, which, look, I think he's an outstanding keeper, one of the best in the biz, except stopping penalties is not his strength, and he did it.
He's awful at stopping penalties, but, yeah. It's kind of cool knowing every game you go in, it's like you're guaranteed a Ronnie Puppet goal. It's just like you're starting off 1-0.
Ronaldo comes through again. He just has a nose for the ball inside that 6-yard box, man. Joseph Benavidez, Carlos Condit, what kind of thoughts you got for both of these guys? Because they both officially retired from mixed martial arts this past week. Who do you want to start with? I mean, they're both WEC and legends for starters, and then they just came over to the UFC and continued kicking butt.
Yeah, just two badass fighters. Like, when did you ever see either one of those guys fight and ever question which Carlos Condit's going to show up or which Joseph Benavidez? Like, you always got the best of them every fight. They guaranteed you that they were in the gym. They never slowed down. They never stopped coming forward. Those are two warriors, man. I'm going to miss watching those guys fight. But I think it probably is the best time for both of them to retire. And that's not to say that they can't stick around and be competitive and beat a lot of people in their divisions. They probably could. But at some point, if we're going to sit here and always tell fighters, why'd you wait so long? You know, I think this is the perfect time for both of them. So I agree with it. And thank you to both of them for everything that they've done.
Yeah, man. They were something else over at WEC. Carlos Condit was actually the welterweight champion. They're undisputed with title defenses. It was fun when the fights were in Vegas and that little scowl and the pace back and forth before his fights. Then he comes over to the UFC and wins an interim title. He had a few more losses towards the end of his career, whereas Joseph Benavidez, I think, kind of maintained winning, sprinkled in with a couple losses here and there. But he never was able to capture a belt like Carlos was. But doesn't mean that he wasn't great. He really was a great, one of the great flyweights ever, and a respectable bantamweight run as well. So congrats to both. I think both can hopefully stick around and be part of mixed martial arts one way or another if they'd like. I think they would. Studious is what I'm trying to say. I think they could mentor other fighters and guide other fighters if that's what they choose to do. Or maybe they don't. I don't know. But I definitely want to thank them both, man. They spilled a lot of blood in the octagon, in the WEC cage. I respect the hell out of both of them, and they both entertained, and they, like I say, they both accomplished so much.
Yeah, agreed.
Folks, that's our show for today. Thank you so much, as always. Hopefully you and yous in Oceania in the UK can take advantage of us getting to this a little bit earlier. We're still not live on video, so for the time being, we will do this. And thank you, as always, for all the feedback that we get across social media. Of course, the two big ones right now are Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at The Goes. Holler at us there. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. I want to thank Marcus Almeida for his time. Good luck against Anderson Silva at One Championship Revolution on 9/24. So that's coming up here on Friday. And, we'll see you. We'll see you Wednesday night, Thursday morning, with the next MMA Junkie Radio. We're closing in on 3,200 shows, so I'm pretty excited about that. Anyway, it's fight week, folks. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We'll talk to you soon. Go out there and be a champion.